The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
It is kind of freaky that they're not making any new monoculture artists. The last one was like Billie Eilish. Certainly the pipe is not flowing like it was. You know?
Speak for yourself.
I'm 43. It's fucking amazing it flowed as long as it did.
Kia ora koutou, welcome along to The Real Pod. It's Alex Casey here and Duncan Grieve.
Morena, Alex.
No, Jane.
It's just us.
Where's Jane?
She's at home sick.
I think it's sort of, I think we've set a precedent now. Maybe one of us just has to be sick every week.
It can't be me next week.
What's that?
I have to go to the airport.
You got a series of meetings?
Forthwith. Not long after. And I do not want that for me.
This is your reality television and popular culture podcast. Is that right?
Yeah, but also there's some, like, real-life reads, you know?
We need to get a That's Life subscription. You ever thinking about that? It's a great mag. There's a lot of crazy shit happens in there, and I feel like a lot of it's Real Pod adjacent. Real Pod magazine.
Isn't that what this podcast is, by any other name?
That's true. So today, Jane's not here. Jane's sick. We're going to talk about... I want to talk about Taylor Swift. I want to talk about gardening. The cat's away. The mice are playing. No, and we're also going to talk about maths.
Yeah, we are. We are. Because it continues to be exactly what it has always been this season. Champagne reality television.
Interesting you say that. I actually think this has been the most boring week ever.
Well, that can be true. Well, just because it's like non-vintage, it's still... fucking excellent. You know what I mean? Like normally, sure. Like I remember historically with maths, basically skipping the midweek episodes because they were just so snoozy. And now if you go like an ad break without some tumult, then you feel ripped off.
This is true. We'll get to that later in reality check. First, real news.
I still don't know which one's real news and which one's... Is this the one? I've been doing this for 7.5 years. Which one's about our lives?
Real news.
Okay,
is all of it. What real news have you got this week, Duncan, first of all?
I think it's the same as you. I've been really getting into gardening.
Okay, this is great. I'm glad we can finally talk about this freely. Tell me about your garden.
Well, so we moved from Kingsland to Mount Albert... about 18
too
months
specific,
ago.
Too specific.
No. Oh, do you think the real pop fandom, the corns? I'm actually growing corn, as you know, right now. Not super successfully, but I got a couple of years going. And we went from having this like disastrous garden a long way away to having quite a large garden that at various times I felt oppressed by. Like Mount Albert's volcanic soils, as you know far better than me, they grow. The things just come out of the ground there. You turn your back and there'll be a tendril and it will be coming for you with bad intentions. And I don't know what to do with that, but it turns out I just need to go and make a meaningful engagement with the Ryobi family of fine electric rechargeable gardening devices, of which I now have, you know, this is very middle classy of me, but shoe fits. I have like a reasonable array and I've just been communing with it, like keeping my lawn in order, keeping my hedges in order, keeping my various shrubs in order. It feels Good. And you?
This is where I need to get to. I'm not quite at the tool man tailor part of the journey, you know? I'm very much borrowing tools. I'm very much using just a single trowel to do everything. Because I am in an edible garden phase. I am a farmer of sorts. I am planting cauliflowers, broccoli, kale, lettuces. I've got veggie gardens. I've got beetroot seedlings.
And these things, are all coming out of the ground. They're not just going into the ground.
They're coming out of the ground.
Man.
As we speak. But I've got a problem. I've got cabbage worms all up in my brassicas at the moment.
Oh, my God. I've heard about your brassicas. They're notoriously wormy. What is going on there?
Well, every day now I have to go out. So I woke up one day and I check the garden every day. This is a pop culture podcast. I think nature is popular culture.
Well, I would like us to talk about what we think is underneath all this. Not just soil, but there's something psychological too, for sure. But let's keep going with the dirt and the worms right now.
The cabbage worm. Well, something's eating all my kale, and then I found this big, fat, juicy green caterpillar on it the other day and Googled it, and it's what those bloody white butterflies hatch eggs and they become green caterpillars and get up all in your brassicas. Anyway, so every day I have to go out and wipe the leaves now of all my vegetables and free them of cabbage worm.
Now, what the experts suggest? Is that what's that guy? Is it Rued Klein paste?
The bug man.
The bug man. Is that what he would suggest? Or is that just like a home remedy?
This is what my dad said to do, because I've still got, like, I don't want to sound like a weird like garden anti-vaxxer, but I've got a weird attitude to sprays.
Really?
I don't want to spend money on sprays.
So it's a financial impediment, not a philosophical one.
Yeah, and again, it's sort of communing with nature more, you know, gently wiping the leaves every day to free them of butterflies. Anyway, I just think gardening's just really great. It's been a huge change in my life, moving to Christchurch and having access to a garden. And it's also completely reframed the way that I think about time, which I think is very useful, because I used to be completely distressed by every day that passed, like, just moving through time is hell and you're only losing time and everything is getting worse. Whereas now I'm like, my kale's getting bigger. It's just great.
It is like, I don't know. So much of this stuff is like such basic J1 gardening vibes, which I'm sure that there'll be lots of real, it feels like something that there'll be I'm surprised there isn't like a real pod gardening corner. There probably is. But, you know, that people will be listening going, the eyes rolling out of the head. But I think just life is stressful. Like, have you seen the news? Have you reported the news? It's no good. But, like, there's something about being outside and just kind of covered in dirt and leaves. not in a kind of a military camouflage-y way, but just, you know, you're getting dirty, and it feels good. Like, it feels like there's some kind, you can kind of feel like a connection to humanity's past, and you don't feel like such a parasite on the world, like a cabbage worm on the global brassica, if you will.
This is, yeah. It's just a miracle every day, you know? I've never comprehended a seed. Like, truly, I've never properly thought about a seed from start to finish. And now I'm just like, you're telling me that I'm going to get cauliflower out of that? I mean, this is the problem, that we've become so detached, right? We've become so detached that I've not even thought about. Remember, we did like 3 weeks the day that we found out how Brussels sprouts grow. That was a massive moment.
That was an error. And errors to it.
And those, like, nature's Ferrero Rocher stack, that's crazy. Anyway, let's stop talking about gardening. It's been 20 minutes. If anyone's got any tips and tricks, send me an email, particularly about cabbage worms. Alex at the Spin-Off. I want to talk about Taylor Swift as well.
Okay.
So the Eras Tour is launched this week. I spent the entire night glued to the Spin-Off's Twitter account, actually, using it to look at everyone who was live updating. It looks like the greatest show ever made. Have you seen the clips?
I've not seen the clips because I get reticent about those things. I like to experience things like a brand new baby when I go to a concert hall. I listen to the sets, but I listen to them on the set lists on shuffle because I want to know the songs, but I don't want to know the order. All of that sort of thing. But I have looked at the set list, and she's so long, and she really is in her eras.
44 songs, 3.5 hours, plus, you know, there's like multiple bloody Paramore, Gale, whoever the hell, opening. It's crazy. What I want to ask you, Duncan, is I know you're switched in with the music industry. What do you know about that tour coming to New Zealand?
I mean, I've heard precisely nothing, and Taylor Swift is nothing if not a shrewd capitalist lady, and I just worry about the... Like, is she so big as an economic force now that she can't fit, like, into New Zealand? Like, I'm sort of struggling to imagine that our GDP is enough as an offering to entice her down here. That is my fear, is that, like, you know, what's our max cap stadium? It's like, could you get 50,000 into Eden Park? How many tickets? She could do, like, 5 Eden Parks in a row, probably, plausibly. And then you look at, you know, versus, I assume that she can play like 80,000 a night at the MCG or the SCG in Australia. And I just don't know how it works. But she will get near-ish here. And surely you, like I, will just make the trip.
I think I will. I think I would. I'd go to Aussie. I'd go to Tassie.
Would you go to Tassie? You know where she won't go? It's fucking Tassie. She's not Taylor Swift. That was a bigger laugh than that joke deserved, but I appreciate
it. It was really, really good. No, I'm just so excited about it. I feel like I should stop looking at it. You're right. It does sort of ruin it. If and when it does come here, I feel like I'm already pretty up to speed on everything that's going to happen during the show.
Except that surely, I just don't think that you can play a 3.5 hour set the same every time. That's my feeling.
There's like a demarcated spot where she's like, this is where a surprise song happens every night, you know, so there's like weaved in spontaneity.
It's just really cool. What I love about her is that she, on some level, operates with enormous constraints. You know, when you are at the scale that she is, you're sort of limited, you know, like in many respects. But in terms of that's kind of incredible sort of business creative genius that was the Taylor's versions as a response to, you know, publishing industry machinations and the financialization of her catalogue. And now with this, where she's gone, okay, how can I make this tour different? And it's basically just playing for like at least twice as long as is practical or plausible. Like that's just, it's just really her. And I think why she's this really singular pop cultural figure that was made for these times.
And I think because it's her and because she cares so much about the fans, she's got to come to New Zealand. She's got to come down here.
Have you seen the exchange rate?
She brought the blow-up snakes last time. You know, she brought the bells and whistles.
She did. And we have been, yeah. I hope you're right. I would love to just pop across the road to see her rather than pop across the Tassie. But yeah, it is just like, it's that whole, the whole tour is like there is more demand than there is scale infrastructure to support her, and it doesn't feel like she's shrinking, it feels like she's growing, and that's almost like scary and exciting.
I mean, they've renamed the town that she opened in, right?
Glendale is Swift, yeah. City. Swift City. It's wild.
I wonder if Wayne Brown likes Taylor Swift.
He's in a band, did you know?
That's huge. Yeah. I did not know that.
He was in a pub and we obviously didn't read my really, really mediocre profile of Wayne Brown we published in the lead up to the election. Yeah, he's in a pub band. And I think I don't think he's a Taylor Swift fan. He's a music, he's a complicated guy, Wayne Brown. Underrated complexity, but I don't think he's a Swiftie.
All right. On that note, I think we should get into Reality Check.
I have 4 weeks to decide I'm going to drop my entire life.
I am disgusted at how much you have copied my husband.
You just bought.
Reality Check.
It's feedback week on Maths.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It means almost nothing.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. It means like a phenomenally shameless act, and watching John pretend like this was anything but like.
This is risky. It's controversial. Never been done anywhere in the world before. But in the name of science, we must swap these couples for a week.
It's so amazing. Because like there's always like the thin veneer of plausible deniability with all of their machinations. And for the most part, you're like, ah. But also, like, I feel like John, I think he's a company man. He's all good. Mel, she's been around. I just am surprised in a way that Alessandra was up for this. Like, for some reason, I ascribed to her quite a, like, an intense moral compass. I don't know if that's fair. But, yeah, it just seemed like an astounding thing to be switching around for 3 days.
Sleeping in the same tiny apartment. I mean, I did wonder, I was like, cynical production brain, maybe they were hoping Taylor would still be here and they would put her with Cam. That's what I was thinking the whole time. Like, I was like, what were they trying to get out of this in terms of engineering affairs?
I mean,
because that's surely why they did it, right?
It's 100% why they, you know, that's the only reason you do it. But I also think they probably knew this time around the couples were reasonably solid and or the ones that weren't sort of actively hated each other. But it's in some ways like that's actually a perfect year to do it because it gives you like this plausible deniability about the science of it. So next year when you've got like some people who are roaming around, boom, you're away and you can replay the kind of do like a little supercut of people saying, oh, it turned out to be really interesting and good. From, geez, where's that Rhys Darby voice coming from? Kill me. You know, from this year.
I suppose it is interesting as well seeing the sort of broader Maths multiverse come together in a way that's not just at the dinner party, that's not necessarily just steeped in, like, conflict and tension, and realising, like, interesting things that, like, oh, Lyndall and Ollie don't really know each other. Like, that's kind of interesting. Like, you just assume they would be mates, but they're not. Like, those little tiny little subtle things, but it was kind of a bit boring. And I think part of that is because we lost the heart of the show, which is Claire and Jesse, I believe.
That was the big emotional arc that carried us through, that had so many different turns. I think that's fair. It was boring by this season of Maths standards, but still had enough.
Yeah.
Still had enough for me.
Should we talk about go couple by couple? Because I did listen to the podcast last week and you were pretty sure that Claire and Jesse were going to stick around.
Oh, I can't imagine that was true. There's no way of proving it.
Should we talk about their decision to leave? I kind of knew it from the moment the week started where we saw Jesse before the CC, as he likes to call it, sitting on seemingly the oven, which seems like a bad start, eating, like, stress-eating yogurt straight out of the tub. And I was like, this man is leaving. This man does not want to stay here anymore. And it ended up being true.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I mean, Harrison, all-time villain run this week. Like, he's really carving himself into Mass Mount Rushmore villain sequence. But he also, I know. Did you absent the messenger? What did you think of the message? Do you buy it?
I don't know how true that is, but I do think it's true that there was probably nothing romantic between them ultimately, and that it sort of revealed that. But I thought when Jesse said, I don't know, I want to believe that Claire is good.
I think Claire can be good and can be not attracted to Jesse, and I think that's what it is.
But I don't think she stuck around purely because of image. I think she stuck around to give it an honest crack, is my hope. But when Jesse chose to leave, so did Claire. You know, she could have kept him there. She could have done an entrapment, but she didn't.
No,
it seemed like they had both sort of decided, like, oh, this is over. But I did think it was interesting when Jesse said, when asked, I think by one of the experts, had Harrison not said that, would you have written leave? And he said no, which is pretty crazy. And again, just speaks to the just endless, chilling power of Harrison.
That funny kind of half. Oh, Jane Yee's calling.
We're getting a live Jane Yee phone call.
Let's check her in the pod.
Check her on.
Hello, Jane Yee.
Hi, Samuel. Look, I've just got really sorry. I know that you're recording. I've just got a really urgent message that I need to pass on to Duncan and Alex, because I've just realised that if we don't get revenue generation, then we're going to have problems with the shareholders.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Leighton.
That is... I think that you're right.
Thank you, Jane.
You're right to identify that as a phrase that we need to apply in all aspects of our lives.
Okay, it's very important business, high level business things that would not be obvious to any living human. Okay, so I'd leave that with you. Not feeling well, so gotta go.
Well,
bye.
Thanks for calling, Jane.
Bye, Jane. Thank you.
She does have a point. If you're listening to this and you want to help out the Real Pod, we're being challenged on our revenue generating, which is currently. Not a huge amount of revenue, so please get in touch.
Maybe we could get sponsored by a garden company.
That's right.
You know?
King's Plant Barn. They've been bought by that Japanese billionaire. Surely they need some publicity. Anyway, if you're listening and you have any revenue-generating ideas, please get in touch.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Should we talk about Leighton then? Leighton and Melinda.
Yeah, let's talk about Leighton and Melinda.
Because we did get a bit of a refresh about Leighton's... background, his business background, his crazy analytical mind and his boardroom talk, and as Jane was alluding to there, it's so funny to think about. I know that the people who are shareholders in his company are probably people and not stoner dogs, but just imagine if they were stoner dogs.
It is very, what's that cool picture of the dogs playing poker?
Yeah.
I imagine that is a board meeting. Just with a big hazy cloud over the top.
There's actually a lot of amazing interviews of Leighton being on like investor chat shows and stuff like that. If you've got an hour to kill, highly recommend check them out.
I'm so scared to Google anything about maths for fear of spoilage.
Another thing about Leighton, always a constant surprise to me that he is like fully tattooed. Is it a surprise to you?
No, but I feel like Leighton is, and this is a huge call, the least stylish guy on the show this year.
I sort of agree. I do think there's another controversial guy who might be circling the drain, though. Leighton's half and half t-shirts that he wears.
Yeah.
What are those?
What are they? And he might also be the tightest pants champ and just wears so much basketball merch, which normally I enjoy and wear some myself, but all bad. Like all of it bad.
He did reveal himself, not just in the tight pants this week. Especially during when the couple swap, which was what we're going to call it, it's not feedback week, it's couple swap challenge, was introduced. He had like a pretty major meltdown. What did you think of his reaction?
Yeah, like, because he never did quite come out and say it was jealousy, but it had jealousy vibes, which seems preposterous given the level of loathing that exists between Melinda and Harrison. But, yeah, like, the crazy thing is, like, I watch this and I'm like, I actually think Melinda and Leighton are a great couple because of the combustibility. Like, I think that that is just a thing that you work through, but it is what it is just kind of passion by another name. But certainly the way that they went about that, both of them were just like completely out of line, I think. And Harrison, that sort of half smirky smile that Harrison has on his face whenever anyone is undergoing any kind of hardship is so repellent. But that whole scene was like just really sad. I don't know. What did you think?
It was unbelievable. I mean, I felt sort of bad for Leighton because I could kind of see how it's like, if you felt sort of weird about something and you're just trying to work it through and be like, maybe I don't want to do this challenge. Like, maybe I should take a stand. I don't know. And you've got Harrison sitting there being like, why don't you know? Look at you fighting again. Oh, this is like basically got the popcorn out. I can see how it would just make you go crazy and make you want to leave and just like get as far away from the situation as possible. But also I'm like, just do it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else
if Melinda is willing to spend 3 days with Harrison, and I quote, the worst person in the world. Huge call, given some of the denizens. Like, you got to, you know, you got to hang with Bronte, who's just like a bit weird. Like, that's fine.
Although I do think Bronte kind of showed herself that she's been studying the master this week, and she's picked up a few tools from the Harrison book of manipulation.
Totally had apprentice vibes, eh?
Completely. It made me laugh when Leighton, in rage, sort of like lifted up his shirt and whipped off his little flesh belt, which has got all the microphone stuff on it. It's just like really hard to do, like pull off when you're really angry.
You can't do it with dignity at any point in time. Yeah. And also, I don't think we lost any audio as a result in it because I just don't think he fundamentally knew how to do it.
Yeah. And also, you know, they've bugged those rooms. Like, they're catching everything all the time. It also did, unfortunately, and I hate that I'm saying this, during that whole sort of sequence, slightly endeared me to Harrison. When he was sitting there and Melinda was like, you're acting like a Harrison right now. And Harrison was like, hey, I'm right here.
There are actually a few little moments where, and there was a couple at the dinner party as well, where Melinda and Harrison, it's not a flirty thing, but it's a like, we just so have spent so much time yelling at each other. There's like almost like a mutual respect or some weird bond that exists between them.
Yeah, they need each other.
Yeah, totally. But Melinda remains, like, her in the moments are always just so good. She is, like, I think, you know, her and Evelyn duel it out for the kind of the smartest detective analyst on the show, and I think maybe it's Melinda.
I did think it was interesting. Did you notice that she instantly started wearing all of Leighton's clothes? Some of my detective work.
That's good detective work.
The huge polo. And then,
like, he thought was an intentional frumping to sort of try and make sure that Harrison got no ideas.
And then it made me think, I was like, wow, is this some weird, like, she's really attached to Leighton more than we thought? And then when we saw her kind of, when Leighton came back, they came back together and Leighton sort of started spewing all this vile stuff that Bronte had fed him about how Melinda, you know, they're not compatible, they don't have the same values and all this stuff. And Melinda was so devastated.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen anyone cry that much on maths. And she was like, it made me think, maybe there's a bit more there than, you know.
Oh, and you saw it again at the dinner party, right? Like, she is like, she was unable to breathe due to caring so much about Leighton, which Leighton's a funny man who, as we have just discussed, wears funny outfits, but they do seem to really like each other.
Speaking of funny outfits, I want to bring up the other person that I think is controversially not a good dresser on the show, and it's Duncan.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay, so I sort of agree, like, but I think that 70s shirt he wears sometimes, basically his 70s shirts are quite good. But
the head-to-toe cream on the retreat, The leather shirt was the craziest thing I have ever seen. I mean, I know he's going through hell. He's had a tough week. Alyssa's put him through the ringer.
Oh, that's all right.
But there's no need for a leather shirt.
I've got this. Well, who is the best guy on the show? Because I think it might be Ollie.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. Okay, I thought 100%. It was controversial after all of the dunkomania earlier in the season. But when Ollie did his, I know we're roaming around a bit, but when Ollie did his cam impression when Linda walked in, what was that? What kind of superhero crazy stuff was that? Amazing.
This is what I've realised when I was watching this week. I was like, is Ollie the first genuinely funny maths contestant that we've had?
Who's intentionally funny.
Yeah. You know, who can actually pull off a joke who we're not all just laughing at.
Yeah, it's not NASA, it's not Troy.
Because they're in their underpants or whatever. Like, he genuinely is, like, cranking out. This week he did Cam impression, Steve Jobs impression, John Aiken impression, which was,
Dwayne,
like,
The Rock
to
Johnson
die for.
Impression.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And we still love him.
They're all great impressions. Like, I was like, when he first came on, I was like, voice actor, please. Now I'm like, can I book you? Imagine what you would pay for him on Cameo, either as himself or as anyone else in the world.
Anyone. It's very exciting.
So going back to Duncan and Alyssa.
Go back to Duncan and Alyssa. Oh, I mean, I don't know what to make of this. There's this whole thing about she's got a person on the outside, aka a child, and she will not let it go. And she keeps sort of saying that Duncan is not making her priority or something. I actually struggled to follow.
Yeah, she can't really make the case at all well for what the problem seems to be. And the self-sabotage is extreme. It's really, really difficult to watch. And also, like, I don't know. Like, so Duncan was brought to tears by the conflict. I don't know. I just don't, like, unless it's a really ruthless edit and they're really happy at the rest of the time, it just feels like this one is kind of sliding towards a breakdown.
Mm. Mm. And it certainly looks like he's doing everything he can, including a racy photo shoot with Evelyn in the bedroom, which would make any other wife go completely insane. What are you doing?
Okay, so let's talk about that. Because, like, I was like, okay, this is going to be the end of it. Like, great photo shoot, but Duncan wearing assumedly just an apron and a rose in his teeth with having his photo taken in a bed with Evelyn. I mean,
craziness.
Even like someone with not a jealous bone in their body is going to be like, about that, surely. But she seemed to just sort of, I don't know. She,
it was like she had detached already. Like, she had already decided when they came back together that she was going to be mad at him. And when he gave her those photos, she was kind of just like, cute. And then he gave her, like, a grab one voucher for an Italian cooking class or something. She's like, oh, thanks.
Well,
I have a child, and then stormed out of the room.
it was a weird week for them too.
I do just like Duncan's, when he's, like, doing this photo shoot and he's like, oh, this is so random. Like, oh, I'm such a goose. And it's like, you've got no idea what you look like, do you? Like, he just genuinely doesn't know.
Well, and also, he photographs very, very well. Like, every single one of those shots, Picasso, you know?
Top notch. Let's talk about Evelyn and Rupert briefly. I don't have much on them. They've started to slap each other on the ass, I wrote. And Alessandra goes, excelente. And that's all.
That's pretty much it. Like, they're fun. And I enjoyed Rupert sort of starting to stand up a little bit for the pair of them. But it just doesn't feel like, it feels like they enjoy being on a TV show.
Yeah. And have we talked about Evelyn's history on this?
No,
podcast?
Can you tell me about her history?
Well, she was on Big Brother UK in 2017 or 2018. Alongside who would become her good friend, Andrew Tate.
Well, that one. I know. That Andrew Tate.
The Andrew
still,
Tate.
Still
they became
current
friends.
Good friend.
Well, no. So they've since gone their separate ways, but they holidayed together.
Wow.
It was a whole thing.
Wow.
crazy.
A Real Pod exclusive?
In a sense, yeah. Via the Daily Mail. and she also had a fling with Justin Bieber.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it's crazy. The Evelyn Hive is feasting right now on gossip.
That is wild.
Yeah. So to your point, I do think there's definitely a part of her that's just happy to be on telly and happy to have her there. She's great, you know. Fantastic
she's
talent.
She's outstanding. I do think in general, like, you don't want it to be all career reality TV technicians, but having a few sprinkled hither and thither who you just know how to keep the thing moving, it's worth it.
Mm. She also started calling Rupert Roops, which I thought was quite cute. I do like Rupert. It kind of makes him sad.
Yeah.
But cute.
Yeah.
I also, Joe actually made a good point.
The way you say that, like, it's that time of the month again.
For once.
It's got a real for once.
That when Rupert does stand up to Harrison, he was like, I think it has an extra gravity because Rupert is a tradie and so is Harrison. And I feel like they have...
Tradie bond.
And they speak in the tradie way. And I think that's why Rupert feels a bit more empowered to speak up to Harrison. You know, maybe he's like, you know... I've seen these guys on site before. Sick of it, you know? Okay.
I don't think there's much more with them, to be honest.
Okay. Cameron and Lyndall. Uh-oh, SpaghettiO.
Cameron.
I mean, first of all, this man needs to stop acting like him having his hair out is, like, the most exciting thing to ever rock the experiment. He did it once and it was exciting. Second and third time, no one's clapping. It's normal. Like, give it a brush, to be fair. He just, like, prances in this way that, I don't know.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, extremely... There's Cam with his hair up and Cam with his hair down, and they do not know each other.
Yeah, it's like when Michael Scott wears like his jeans on a Friday on The Office and he like dances in. But the big conversation point this week was Cam's career in the middle of nowhere, 900 kilometres from anywhere, with no reception for months at a time.
For who knows how long. It's really amazing. Like, I don't know, I sort of lost a lot of sympathy for Cam, the sort of, you know... The boy from the Northern Territories, never been kissed, that whole trope this week. Because the show's called Married at First Sight. Like, you can't go into it with this, like, really excited to meet and marry a lady, but also cannot wait to head out remote for anywhere up to a year without reception. Like, you know, and as he was kind of... Like, you know, they eventually sort of interrogated this out of him at the dinner table. But, you know, he did say, if this thing works out, I'm willing to make these sacrifices. But he's not willing to make the sacrifices now. So, I don't know. So he's a chippy. I just feel like there must be some chippying that happens in the city. It's not just out
closer.
Remote. You know?
They need chippies in Perth.
I'm sure they do.
You know? That's all Lyndall wants, is for him to come to Perth and go rollerblading. Another revelation that Lyndall is a maybe roller derby something. I don't know. We know little about her.
We don't. Yeah, it's just the only thing I wonder is if maybe, because Cam does seem to be like one good experting and he can, you know, he could swing it around. So I wouldn't write them off just yet, but it was a pretty bad week. And as Ollie, you know, figured out with his, like, 5 minutes on the couch with Lyndall, they have a deeper conversation than Cam and Lyndall have ever had. You know, they just haven't spoken about almost anything, seemingly.
It's really sad. When Cam – oh, we haven't talked about Girls and Boys Night. When Cam rocked up to Boys Night, I was – Remind, have you seen this documentary called Hotel Coolgardie?
Oh, no.
It's really great. It's set in, like, the middle of probably one of these places, like, you know, where people fly in for 6 months and work on the mines or whatever. And it's the creepiest documentary just about this one pub in this town and the two women that are working behind the bar in this, like, seething town full of blokes. And I'm not saying that Cam is like part of that, but when he was like, when it was boys' night, and he's like, time for a couple of Scoonie Matatas.
Scoonie Matatas was so good.
What are you saying? He's just like, has this sort of laddish thing where I'm like, I don't know if you're like totally in this. I don't know if you're totally ready.
Well, or yeah. I think he's totally in this, but he's so much more comfortable surrounded by men and men alone. Speaking of boys' night, how good was the like fucking redemption and sort of arc for Adam? Just for like standing up to Harrison and kind of staring him down.
That's right. When he's like, "You're gonna knock over your wine, boy."
It was such crazy toxic masculine energy in that exchange. "You're gonna knock over your wine, boy." The boy is really full on. He's doing so much work.
Yeah, and it was like, what he's saying is kind of nothing, but it just sounded so freaky. Like,
yeah, it's like he was challenging him to a duel or demanding satisfaction somehow.
And Harrison hated it.
Oh, yeah, he had to go.
He had to go. Who else? Shannon arrived.
Shannon did literally nothing apart from eat a salad in a disgusting way. And then
which we've seen him do before.
Get bagged out by Rupert, which was great. That's all he deserved. Like, no speaking lines for you.
No, featured extra. And Josh and Hugo returned and everyone was gobsmacked at their likeness.
They both have floppy hair.
Yeah, Ollie was just like, I can't believe it. Yeah, what else happened? Oh, the girls' night. We've got Bronte and Harrison left to do. Let's save them till last. So the girls' night basically was all about Janelle and Caitlin's return. And Sandy, all the scorned women. But I particularly liked Janelle and Caitlin just put on the most incredible makeup looks for their like revenge bodies, you know.
Yeah.
Janelle, they sort of tried to play it like Janelle had unfinished business with Claire.
But that lasted about
four
seconds. And then actually quite a lovely, like another just cracking apology from Claire. That was the crazy thing about the Bronson Adam thing was Adam is just not a world-class apologizer, but he was just muddling his way through. He was trying his best. He was not, like, whatever Harrison was saying he was doing was not what he was doing intentionally, or even, I think, you know, if you were doing, like, a sort of mean-spirited analysis of the text, it was just, like, such a bizarre, you know, Harrison, just a creature. We'll get to that. We'll get to it.
I think we could just get to it right now. I mean, there's nothing much more
Bronson
from the girls' night
Bronte storms out.
Bronson. Oh my God, Bronson, take out that eyebrow piercing, please.
For the Bronte storms out for the millionth time. It is.
Because, Sandy asked her again, are you being emotionally manipulated? She walked out. Sandy sort of had this nice moment where she said, I didn't find love, but, you know, I found these 11 amazing women.
And they all took turns to do a tagline for it. Like a real right. Inspirational quotes.
Okay, let's talk about Bronte and Harrison then. Harrison is the biggest villain in maths history.
Yeah.
Correct?
Well, you know, like not necessarily in terms of peak crime, but in terms of like consistent criminality, I think. You know, he's a career criminal, you know, rather than a guy who did like one or two big whoopsies.
And when you compare him to, like, you know, there are parallels with Bryce from a season or two ago. But the difference is that, like, Bryce was kind of scrambling a lot of the time, which is part of why we loved him, was that he sort of was trying to, like, throw out these lies and keep afloat and keep everyone happy, but didn't really know how to do that and always looked quite under the pump. Harrison is in total control.
Scary control
of almost everybody around him.
And just, he's got he is the Joker, right? Like, he just wants to watch the world burn. He's never happier than just shooting darts out into a crowded room and just seeing who starts to fall.
But he's also, like, completely unwilling to, he can't make up lies about himself. Like, when the experts asked him, they said something like, what have you contributed that's unhealthy to the relationship? Or he said something like, I'm not perfect, I've made mistakes.
And he just can't remember any. Like, but I'm sure there must be some.
And he's like, oh, I just, sorry, I can't. I don't know. Can't think of anything. Sorry. Well, so that's where he kind of glitches. Like, it's interesting.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's glitching so much as, like, there's something about, like, if you ask me to just name Adam's bad stuff or Shannon's bad stuff, I'm just like, instant recall. But something about the way that Harrison goes about things and these kind of crazy sort of mode shifts that he does, like, it's like they... It's like a, you know, one of those evaporating messages or something. It's somehow like you can't, it's like a gaseous substance that you can't capture. So you know that he is just this awful gaslighting, manipulating guy. And yet no one sort of can lay out the case for the prosecution in that sort of systematic way. Because it's just, he's this shape-shifting object. He is unsettling, like deeply unsettling.
Truly. I've just been reading that book about psychopaths.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it's interesting.
It's just an honest opinion.
It's a good read. It's a good read.
Apropos of literally nothing.
Apropos of nothing. I thought it was quite a tell. I mean, also, we've never seen any affection or any sense of real connection between him and Bronte. When the experts asked him, do you think Bronte's good enough for you? He said, yeah, I love showing her off.
I know.
Which is like a trotty, you know, a true trotty. But the scariest thing that we saw even more of this week is that Bronte is not only just completely back on Team Harrison, she has like absorbed a lot of his methods and used them on Layton to turn him against Melinda.
It's very Last of Us, right? Like, yeah, she's got the shrooms in her brain. It's a bad, bad vibe.
When she told Layton, when Layton came to her and was like, you know, me and Melinda have had this big fight about this challenge and said this weird thing about him having, you know, different morals or whatever. And Bronte said to him, you know, your first reaction is often your most raw, genuine, authentic feeling. And I was like, isn't that 100% not the case? Like, that's what my therapist says. It's like, it's definitely not true. Your first thought is always like, you need to sit with it and breathe in, breathe out. She's doing bad therapy on Layton.
But exactly. So like, obviously, like, a big part of what Harrison's trying to do is be the fourth expert, which is just excruciating given that everything we know about him. But there's like a Bronte is the sort of 4.5 expert thing that starts to happen in this show. Because she starts to say Harrison-type things in a Harrison-type style with this sort of weird, kind of slightly faraway look on her face. Like, she's not really sure where this stuff's coming from, but, you know, it's coming out.
There was a tell also at Girls' Night when I think she was hit up about the manipulation thing, and she said, he doesn't emotionally manipulate me, but we have had some conversations about my voice and how he would like me to speak. But that's all. And I was like, run. I mean, Melinda said it in like week one. Run.
Yeah.
And we saw again, you know, there was another big blow up. He broke up with her over text last week, right, or at the start of this week. They got back together. They've had more fights. He's turned it around on her again.
It's always – there was that really excruciating scene where he was sort of interrogating her and sort of impugning her motives and so on. And you could just see that it was – almost felt like it had come out of boredom – from his side, and she felt so ambushed by it that you remember that there was that scene early on where Hugo sort of started to question the nature of reality at a dinner party because of Taylor's the way that Taylor was sort of working him over, and it felt like Bronte was having a moment like that where she was like, this is a person who put me through hell, but we'd achieved this kind of equilibrium and had this us against the world thing going. And then seemingly like flip of a switch, he's like intentionally destroying her. Having amassed all this power, he's now decided, I will deploy it for evil now. And it's full on.
It's real full on. And, you know, as the expert said, he throws bombs. He did another one. Not only did he blow up his own relationship and show up at the dinner party on his own, He then cast one more grenade onto the table about Leighton and Melinda and whether they have matching morals and how that would have made Melinda feel that Leighton was questioning her morals. And then you just see him sit back in his little lemon Ralph Lauren shirt and watch the carnage.
It's not that little shit. There's a lot of Harrison going on under there.
There is a lot of Harrison.
So, but he also did that thing where he, you know, was talking about how late they stayed up and all the things they talked about, like just trying to sort of just seed a little bit of jealousy in there. Like there's just no opportunity to kind of try and wreck someone else's happiness that he won't grab and run with.
It's incredible. He just infects everything. And I almost feel like he infects the audience. Like I feel stressed when Harrison is on screen. It makes me anxious thinking about like, he's gaslighting everyone.
The thing that stresses me out most is like, this is him with cameras everywhere and everything being recorded. Like, what is he like late at night in the club on a dating app with, you know, people that he has kind of some degree of control and no supervision over? Like, to me, based on the show, this is a terrifying human. But one of the things about this week, this is just a bit of behind the, you know, behind the curtain. Like we get sent this drive, which the episodes are dropped into by some beloved representatives of Discovery Corporation. And this week they got a bit behind, so I had to watch some of it on 9 Now through a VPN, which was Australian ads are real full on. Lots of medical, like lots of weight loss drugs, real lot of weight loss drugs, which is deeply uncomfortable, and you know what the show that they're interspersing is. But the best part was the very end of it, they had, I think, the Australian kind of throw forward, which was really different to the sort of generic international next week on maths. And it had these crazy blood red stripes like going across the experts' faces that gave them this kind of ghoulish and quite aged appearance. And the accountability that the experts were demanding of a bunch of people, but particularly Harrison, was like they were trailing this as, you know, the whatever, the biggest Sunday of the year or something. And it was like so full on that it made me think that next week, the final commitment ceremony, you know, we've had so many years of just feeling like the experts are just like, whether intentionally or not, not seeing and not holding them accountable. This feels like it's like the trial of the century, and we're going to see some things.
Oh my God, can't wait. 2 weeks to go, right?
It's crazy. 2 weeks to go. It's mad.
What are we going to do without it? Hey, thank you so much, Duncan and Samuel and Jane and the people listening at home.
Join us next week for more Kale Watch.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.